Good morning, everyone. How are we doing today? Come on, let's try that again. How are we doing today? Much better, much better. I hope you guys are having an awesome conference so far. There's been some really awesome sessions spread across lots of tracks. I hope you had a lot of fun. And first of all, I really appreciate you guys rocking up nice and early on the last day of TechEd. So thanks for that. And in this session, we're going to be talking about SharePoint Online performance, specifically focusing on page performance from a portal perspective. A quick introduction. My name is Shyam Narayan, and I'm a program manager on the SharePoint Online team focusing on performance and service elasticity. I work out of the Redmond campus, and this is my first time at TechEd Europe. I want to give you a bit of background about the session. So the SharePoint Online team spends a lot of time looking at data and trying to understand and gain learnings from the operation of the service. And we also speak to a lot of customers during escalations to understand their performance problems. And this session is all about taking those learnings, distilling them into concrete guidance that you can take away with you and start applying straight away to your scenarios. Just before the session, I had a chat to a couple of you folks, and I'm hoping that some of these learnings can be applied straight away to your environment. So what are we going to be talking in the next hour and a bit? So there are four key areas I want to focus on. I want to start talking about performance at scale and what are the key differences between SharePoint on-premises and SharePoint Online. I want to talk about the common problems we see in SharePoint Online and what are the root causes. I want to then spend the rest of the session talking about the tips and tricks that you can apply to your environment to make your SharePoint Online pages blazingly fast. And I want to do this using a demo that we'll run through throughout the session, where we take a page that takes a long time to load, 20 or 30 odd seconds, and then we start chipping away at it. And then finally, I want to speak to you about how we manage capacity within SharePoint Online and what strategies do you have to roll out large portals. And this is a question that we get often from customers who are concerned when they come onto SharePoint Online with lots of users. Will it scale? Will it be able to handle the load? So I want to talk to you and convince you that we are built and scaled enough to handle anything you throw at us. And like I said, we got a demo that I'll be running throughout the session. So one thing that I want to call out, the SharePoint Online team is extremely data-driven. We have a ton of telemetry and optics coming out of the service, which give us a ton of data that we look through. We have data, we collect data on server-side rendering, how long pages took on server-side to get rendered. We also have code markers in the client that sends us back data on what the client experience was. Now, how long did the page take on the client to render? How many files came down? We use W3C navigation timing APIs to capture that to understand what the customer experience was on the other end of the wire. And what we see is 75% of all SharePoint Online pages load in less than 1 second, which is awesome. However, what we see is the slowest 1% of pages take more than 5 seconds to load, which means it can be anywhere from 5 seconds through to 10, 15, and we've even seen up to 30 seconds. And what I want to do is make sure we look at what are these causes for these slow page responses and what we can do to make sure that we're armed with so that we don't end up in that bottom 1%. To understand that, we need to understand what are the key differences between on-premises server and SharePoint Online. Typically, what we see, so on SharePoint on-premises, you have a few servers, probably a dozen or so, hosting a few sites, and they're completely accessed by users from within your organization. Generally, we see performance issues in these cases because of full trust code or complex pages. You also have your SharePoint servers connected to your users using generally a low latency, high bandwidth connection. And on the other side of the wire, you have most probably or generally you have hardware that you have deployed and you control the browsers that are on that. That trend is changing with BYOD and new form factors, but in general, there's a much tighter control over hardware on which these pages run. If you contrast this with SharePoint Online, what we have is we have hundreds of servers within a farm, which means that when a request comes in from the client, we often have to talk to a couple of additional servers behind in the back end to render those pages. We have some features which rely heavily on caches, and when we have cache misses, that becomes expensive because now we are required to go back to those back-end servers more often. Another big change, and which has a huge impact, is the network. The low latency, high bandwidth network is now the internet. Once the request response leaves the Microsoft network, we have to be routed over the internet till we land on your ISP before hitting the user. And we all know it, routing over the internet is not the most optimal path. One of the things we have been doing in SharePoint Online is starting to offload a lot of our static assets off to CDN. How many of you are familiar with CDNs? Quick show of hands. So what CDNs allow us to do is make sure these static assets are downloaded when a user requests them, rather than coming all the way back to the SharePoint Online data center. We can download them and serve them from the closest node to the user. So we save time and latency. And we've been working within the engineering team to offload a lot of our static assets off to the CDN to get to a point where you only come to the data center to get the truly dynamic aspect of your page, which is the raw page itself. Now, on the browser, you know, I would say it remains relatively unchanged, but there is this change that we're seeing from client's perspective. And what I mean by that is with the mobility and with the SharePoint Online and the cloud in general provides, what we see is users are now accessing these services from different form factors, such as mobile devices, tablets, from machines, from their personal devices, on different networks. So it gets a bit more trickier to manage the experience on the client. Some of the larger customers I've worked with, one of the key aspects that we have focused on during large portal rollouts is making sure we get the experience right on a variety of form factors. And that's been baked into the design from the start. I want to talk to you about how we look at performance within SharePoint Online. Yeah. We use a language of percentiles to capture latency. And the reason we do this is because for any given web page, without exception, you will see a range of latencies or a curve of latencies. And to wrap our head around that, so you can, for example, if you request a home.axph homepage, that might at times come back in subseconds. Sometimes it might take a few seconds, 5 seconds. And to really wrap our head around that, what we do is we take these latency curve and plot it into percentiles, where at the lower percentiles, we have low latencies. And as we start tending towards the higher percentiles, the latency increases. And what we focus on specifically is the 95th percentile. What the 95th percentile? It's one out of every 20 requests. And we have data to suggest that if a user is subjected to one bad request or a really slow request one out of 20 times, they are most likely to not have a good experience with the service. So what we do and what we ask our customers to do is when they're trying to understand performance of their pages is to plot the percentile curve, understand the factors that's driving up the 95th, and focus on pulling that down. And what you get is by pulling the 95th down, you start pulling down latencies all across the curve. So what I want to do is quickly jump into a demo and show you how we can start looking into performance issues in SharePoint Online. Quick show of hands, how many of you run SharePoint on premises today or have had? Okay, that's a fair share. So one of the things you would have done or frequently do is log on to the boxes either during development, testing, or to troubleshoot issues in production to access ULS logs, to access IIS logs, to look at performance counters, to really understand what's going on the server. However, you don't have that flexibility with SharePoint Online because we don't give you access to our servers. But what we have done is we've got certain gems hidden away in our page responses which allow you to get to guess what's going on server side and help troubleshoot your experience. I'm just going to flip over to my demo machine. What I'm going to do is hit F12 on my browser. So how many of you use developer tools in Chrome or IE? There you go. Yeah. So I've just hit the F12 switch, and I've got my network tab open. What I wanted to tell you is the page that I'm going to show you, I've crafted it to be in the 95th percentile. I've done things to it so that it has horrendous perf. I'm just going to go load the page. And what you'll notice is this is one of your 10-second or 15-second response page. I spoke to a few folks who said they have had a few of those pages. So this gives you an example of a really slow page. We'll wait for it to come back. I'm still waiting. Still waiting. There you go. Finally, the page comes back. And if you look at the waterfall and the big blue line up front, it looks like we spent nearly 37 seconds on the server. And what we have done is we've added some data to the response headers to help you understand this better. So I'm just going to go click the home page, look into the response headers that have come back. And what we bury in there are these couple of headers that I want to show you. These two headers that come back as part of the response, the SPIIS latency and the SP request duration, that's the sum of those two values is the total amount of time you have spent on the server processing the page. To break it down further, SPIIS latency is the time you've been queued in IIS in milliseconds before being dispatched to the SharePoint request handler. And the second value, the SP request duration, is the amount of time you've actually spent within the SharePoint process processing your page. In this case, you can see you've spent nearly 36 seconds on the server processing your page. And that accounts for most of the wait time we had up front. Another thing a lot of customers ask me is, how can I tell that it's not SharePoint Online that's slow and it's my page? The first thing I would do is look at the SP request duration. And if you go down further, there's another header that we send back, which is called the X SharePoint health score. How many of you know about the X SharePoint health score? Okay. That value represents the server health, or basically the machine that's served a request, how healthy is it on a scale of 0 to 10, where 0 being absolutely healthy and 10 being the server is really unhealthy. And by the time we start hitting, start trending towards 9 and 10, we start throttling internally to prevent and protect the server. So in this case, you can see the SharePoint health score is 0, which means the server is running fine. However, the SP request duration is really high, which gives us a hint that most of the time has been spent processing the page. Another quick tip that I generally give customers is, if in doubt, try browsing to your OneDrive for Business homepage. That's a page that's generally not customized, and see what the experience is over there. So I'm just going to go launch my OneDrive for Business on my tenancy. Probably just hit F12 on that as well. Go F5. And what you see in this case is, zoom into 145 milliseconds on the server. That's a sub-second response time. So the page was processed in 145 milliseconds before it was sent back. So this tells you the problem is not within SharePoint Online, but more has to do with the customization of a page itself. Okay, let's switch back to the deck. Okay, no more waiting. Top five causes for bad performance in SharePoint Online. The first and most common, structural navigation. How many of you use publishing portals in SharePoint? Yeah, and we all know an awesome feature that the publishing portal has is this capability to dynamically generate a hierarchical nav. And it does this, which is security trimmed, it understands publishing state, it's a really cool feature. However, the way it does this is it has to visit all subsites in your site collection to render that hierarchy. So deeper the depth of your site collection, more work we have to do on server side to render out this navigation. Just to give you the amount of work we do to render this nav, as an example, every site we visit, we tend to make somewhere between 6 to 8 SQL round trips. It's not uncommon to have site collections with 200 subsites. That equates to 1,600 SQL round trips. That was one of the issues with the page that I just showed you. I got around 200 subsites, and I've just said show all the subsites with security trimming. And the first time the site booted, I was pretty much churning away talking to SQL to build up that nav. The second most common thing that we notice is content rollup. Again, when we use publishing portal, we generally have content rolled up on the landing pages. A lot of us are used to using content by query webpart. How many of you have used content by query webpart? Yeah. It's been a super popular webpart. Again, content by query webpart, you can make it do the same thing that the structural nav does. You can configure a query which goes and looks at all list items in a site collection and say matches for specific ones and bring that back. And the reason this is because, and the reason I say this is very similar to structural navigation, is because both the structural nav and content by query webpart use the same underlying infrastructure to query for data. It's called the portal sitemap provider, which gets turned on when you enable publishing features. The third common case, large files, huge images and videos. You might tell me this is common sense, this is straightforward, you shouldn't be telling us this. But the problem is we see this time and time again, where we have huge images and videos coming down synchronously as part of the page load process, making the page load experience really sluggish. I'll give you an real-life example. Earlier in the year, my team and I, we were working on, we had a customer escalation, a really large customer escalated, and we were troubleshooting their performance, and we were going through their waterfall, and we noticed a 12 MB background image coming down synchronously as part of page load, a 12 MB file, a full high-def file coming down, which was really making the page load slow. We got rid of the file, performance was back to normal. Although this might seem obvious, but people do it. So just keep an eye out for that. The next one is lots of requests. And this is, I think, with the move to SharePoint Online and the cloud, there's a huge push for using client-side customization using JavaScript and CSS to customize the portal. Now, you were used to writing a lot of full trust code on-prem, which you're not allowed to do in the cloud. And the right pattern is to do client-side customizations. However, what we notice is developers like to modularize their code, have lots of file where their solution is split up. And unfortunately, we see a lot of times this modularization ends up on the pages, which means end users who don't care about code quality end up requesting a ton of files. I'll talk to you about some options we've got to make that a much better experience and optimize your HTTP traffic. Finally, lots of web parts. You know, the more web parts you put on a page, the more work we do on the server. So the question I ask my customers is that web part required on a page? Can you do without it? Can you make that a static content instead of a dynamic lookup? And more often than not, customers have come back and said, you know what, that content doesn't change that often. We can make it static. So what I would ask you and your developers, your designers, is anytime they drop a web part on the page, think if there is an option to make that static. So just to summarize, the first two, structural nav and content rollup, and lots of web parts, the last one, will dictate the amount of time you spend on the server processing the page. The large files and lots of files in your HTTP request will dictate the client experience. So to have an optimal end-user experience, we need to make sure that we tune both sides of the... Now, one obvious question that comes that I get asked a lot is, Shyam, structural nav, content by query, web part, you've got guidance from Microsoft over the last few years saying that we use caching and it's all good. Why does that not work in the cloud? And it's an obvious question. And to explain that, I want to talk to you about the key difference again, what we see with CloudScale. We have features that depend on these front-end caches, work really well on-prem. However, these legacy features tend to not scale as expected in the cloud. While we are working on making them better, I'll talk to you about some ways on how we can reduce our reliance on these front-end caches. So let's look at SharePoint on-prems. Typically, like I said, you have a dozen or so servers. The biggest firms you've seen have tens of servers. You have a few busy sites, a couple of portals, and you have a few hundred to thousand users who are all accessing the same site. Let's assume you've got a publishing portal, which is shown by that green page over there, and a user tries to access it on one of your web front ends. Let's assume that the cache is not primed. What you get is a red arrow, which is basically a cache miss. SharePoint will then go off and hydrate that cache locally. You have another user who comes and requests the same page, and now it gets bounced off to another machine. We have the same experience. The cache gets hydrated, and subsequent requests are served from the cache. However, we tend to hydrate caches on all the web front ends relatively quickly because of the scale, which means most users, as they start using a portal, they tend to have more of cache hits and do not see this performance issue. What we have observed on-prem is you have cache misses at the 99th or upper 99th percentiles, which means one out of 1,000 or higher, which means users don't notice that too much. Another thing customers do on-prem is they run warm-up scripts. How many of you run warm-up scripts to keep your SharePoint humming? There you go. An indirect effect of running those warm-up scripts is that you have your cache primed already. So that's again slims down the number of times end users have cache misses. Now, if you contrast that with SharePoint Online, what we have is we have thousands of servers. We have tens and thousands of active sites which are in use. We have hundred thousand of users, or even millions of users using the service at any given point in time. And what we tend to see is, more often than not, because of this scale, users tend to have more cache misses. You would argue that if you had a really large tenancy with lots of users and driving lots of load, you would be distributed across a lot more front ends, and the chances of you having a cache hit, shown by the green arrow, is definitely higher. But we need to be cognizant of the fact that this infrastructure is shared by thousands of other users at the same time, who are trying to do exactly the same thing as your users are trying to do. Load up portal pages, and you end up competing for shared resources. So we have front-end caches, and we have a cap on how much memory these things can take. So what we see is, although you might have the cache primed, you may have a few users coming in using those machines and get a cache hit, another tenant might come and push out your objects from the memory, which means the same user coming back to the same machine may not have a cache hit, and you have to go through the process of rehydrating the cache. So you tend to see this really choppy cache hits. And the way I like to summarize this is that at cloud scale, relying on server-side caching is always risky. You want to start focusing on how you can start leveraging client-side caches. And I'll talk to you about that in a sec. Okay, let's flip back to a demo. I want to show you what options we've got with structural navigation to improve our performance. I'm just going to flip back to that page. I've got that page open. 36 seconds on the server. What I'm going to do is quickly launch the site settings page. This is another really interesting question that comes up. You know, site settings. Sham, that's an out-of-the-box administration page. Why is that slow? The reason that's slow is because when we turn on publishing, we share the navigation control between the admin side of the house and the end user side of the house. So you get the same cache miss experience, which causes even the out-of-the-box pages to get sluggish. So I'm just going to go into the navigation area. Let's close that down. You can see even all out-of-the-box pages are starting to get slow. The reason is because we've got hundreds of servers in any given farm, and we get bounced around all servers. There is no session affinity. We do not affinitize users to one box. We get sprayed across. The load balancer sprays users across all machines. Every time you land on a machine that doesn't have the cache, you end up with the same issue. So a couple of things I want to point out here. One, you have a couple of options. Although structural nav is the most natural thing or the thing that you're used to, with SharePoint 2013 and SharePoint in the cloud, SharePoint Online, you have an option to use taxonomy or managed metadata-driven navigation, which allows you to specify your navigation hierarchy in a term store and use that and tag pages to that and drive navigation off them. The benefit of that is you do not end up needing to, the dependency on the backend cache reduces. Or the other option you can do is reduce the depth of your structural nav. You can go to tune the master page to say instead of a really deep navigation, just keep it to three levels deep. That will definitely ease the pain. However, both have got pros and cons. With structural nav, you have the security trimming and the dynamic behavior. With managed navigation, your administrator has to manage it. And the other con of that is we do not security trim the nodes in a managed navigation, which means that even if users do not have access to the page, the node will still show up. They click on it, and then they get an access to that. Just to show you the difference of what happens when I just say take off subsites and see how quickly the page loads. If I go back to the home page, I'm just going to re-request that page. There you go. That was much, much faster than 36 seconds or that we had the first time around. But it's still taking approximately 7 seconds on the server to render. And I'll talk to you about why that is. So you can see by just taking off the nav, I've shaved off more than 80% of my render time. Another option that a few of my teammates have, we've been working, which is not part of the product, but you have an option, is you can roll your own navigation using search. Search is a big deal in SharePoint Online. We invest a lot of time and energy in making sure freshness is high, relevance is high. We have cool features such as Delve, which are all powered by the search index. So we thought, why not roll a navigation which uses search to show you the navigation nodes? And the good thing about search is it automatically security trims. So you would know you only see search results that you're authorized to. So you get the best of both worlds. So what I've done, I've got a specific master page that changes, that actually changes the navigation from the out-of-the-box nav to a custom nav. I'm just going to wait for that to load up. Okay. Looks like it's loaded. There you go. So I'm just going to go request that page again. And just keep an eye out for the navigation, the way it loads up. The page came back relatively quickly. You have the same experience like out of the box, search structural nav. But this navigation was powered using search, and it was rendered client-side. And what I mean by that is, what we did was, as the page loaded, we fired off a REST query against the search index and queried for all subsites in that site collection. We then built up that hierarchy on the client and used knockout to actually bind and give you that out-of-the-box nav field using search. I'll run you through the code, but I just want to show you the experience again. If you keep an eye out, the search bar is there even before the page has completed rendering. And the reason for that is because we're using JavaScript to do this, and we're using browsers which are HTML5 enabled, we can use local storage, where once we have the result, we can cache it locally. So you don't need to go back to the server to get your navigation. We pretty much can render the nav even before the page completes loading. I'm just going to flip over to Visual Studio quickly to show you what this looks like. So I just want to... This URL here, that's the REST query that gets executed to get all subsites from your site collection. If you look at the query structure, all I'm saying, I'm just going to zoom in there, all I'm saying is use the basic query API and then filter by STS web, which is telling the search query to only bring me back subwebs from that site collection. And I also give it the path parameter, because the search index goes across your entire tenancy. And I use the path parameter to really narrow down the search scope to say, get me all subsites from this site collection. And to just give you an output of that, I'm just going to execute that query again. So that's the same query that we had. What you would notice first here is elapsed time. That's the time we took on the server to get that data back for you, 109 milliseconds. The same data coming back in 109 milliseconds. And the reason for this is because when we go execute a search query, we bypass a lot of the SQL dependency and we go straight to the index on disk. And this is the result that comes back as JSON. I'm not going to walk you through this. It'll be a bit boring, but I'm going to walk you through some of the code that we use to actually do this. How many of you want to see some code? Okay, awesome. So what we do is, when the page loads, we have a view model that fires up. And what it does is it checks for a locally cached version of the navigation node. So we check locally, is there a navigation node available? Do I have data already cached? And if I have it cached, how long has it been cached for? So I've just picked 3 hours. So I go back to the server every 3 hours to refresh. The navigation generally doesn't change that often. So I've just picked 3 hours. You can pick a time that works for you. And if it is within the time frame and it's not stale, I load up the navigation from my local storage. If for some reason, you know, it's the first time I'm visiting the site or my navigation has expired, what I then do is execute an AJAX call to that REST endpoint, get the data back, and build up the hierarchy on the client. So a couple of things that I wanted to show you is the search results that come back, it's got a couple of really good parameters. It gives you, for every item that comes back as a search, as a search result, it tells you what the parent was. So you can easily build up the parent-child hierarchy that you need for navigation. I'm just going to quickly show you that. So that, you can see, is the site path. And somewhere in here, we will have the parent, which will point back to the root site. And there we go. We have the parent link, which tells us, for that site, that's the parent. And if I flip back to the JavaScript code, there's a bit of code over here to basically understand and build that hierarchy up. So we basically look, if you don't have a parent, we assume you're at the top level, and then we just walk through the entire array of nodes and build up the parent-child relationship. Once that's built, we use Knockout. How many of you have heard about Knockout.js? This is an open source popular library. Yeah, I got one hand over there. So we use Knockout, which is an open source library, to use NVVM binding. And what I mean by that is we got this HTML, this JavaScript object, which has got the hierarchy. And what we have done is, in the master page, we've taken off the out-of-the-box navigation control and replaced it with a few HTML fragments. In this case, all I've got is a div which hosts the navigation container. And I've got an unordered list which binds using Knockout.js to render that nav. Okay, I'm just going to flip back. And quickly summarize. So structural nav, if you do need to use structural nav and you don't have expertise enough to customize, keep the depth shallow. If not, try using managed nav as an alternative option. However, if you want best of both nav, best of both worlds, where you want the security, you want the dynamic behavior, you can roll something like the search-driven nav that we showed you. And just to be sure, I'll also have links at the end of this deck, which has got pointers to where you can get all the source code from. The next item I want to look at is content rollup. You know, we spoke about content query web parts being popular and very frequently used in portals. Let's look at what options we've got with content query web parts. So this page that we've got loading at the moment, I'm just going to hit F5 again to see how long it takes. The reason it's still slow is because we've got a content query web part on the page that's rendering the offices list on the right-hand side. You can see if I go back up here, I'm still around, I think, the 5 or 6 second mark on the server. Yep, around 6 seconds on the server. So what I'm going to do is go edit this page and try and optimize the query a bit to see how much performance gains we can have on the server. Hit edit. Edit page. There you go. I'm going to jump in, change web path settings. I have it configured to say, go across the entire site collection and get me specific pages. I'm just going to scope it down to go look at a specific pages library and pull up data from there. So basically scoping down the query. You can see it says, show me all items from the site collection. I'm going to say, instead of doing that, just show me items from the offices subsite and specifically from the pages library in there. The pages library is like that. And I'm just going to save that now. I've saved it. F12 again, bring up the dev dash, the network developer tools. I'm just going to refresh the page. And what you should start seeing is the page timing starting to come down. We were at 5 seconds with that broad brush query. My guess is right, we should be somewhere between the 1 to 2 second mark. We're actually faster in this case. We've come down to 399 milliseconds, so it's faster. If you try a few requests, you'll see that you'll be bouncing somewhere around the 1 to 2 second mark on server side to get this page rendered. You can see we probably got bounced off to a separate server in this case. We took around 5 seconds, unfortunately, in this case. So even with the query tightened, we do not get optimum performance. We still rely on caching. What I've done is, I've actually created a copy of the home page. I've called it Contoso Home 2, which is a similar page. You can hit that, there you go. It's a similar page, except that instead of content by query web part to roll up the content, I'm using content by search web part. How many of you have heard about content by search? Okay, quite a few. It's awesome. And we made it available in 2013. It was made available in SharePoint Online, I think, end of last year. And content by search web part allows you to do the same style of roll-up like content by query, but you use the search index like we used for the structural nav. The other benefit of content by search, which I really like, is unlike content by query, which uses XSLT on server-side to render out your HTML, content by query uses client templates, which are, again, JavaScript and HTML-driven. So again, you can use cool libraries, and you can really control the client experience. You get back data, and you customize it on the front end. Now, if you go back and have a look at the amount of time we spent on the server, no dependency on cache, boom, 612 milliseconds. So just shy of half a second, just a tick over half a second. And if you, and the thing is, this is pretty consistent no matter how many times you browse to this page. Because of that lack of dependency on the cache, you end up getting a pretty consistent performance. I'm going to flip back. So just to summarize, if you do need to use content by query web parts, keep the depth shallow like structural nav. Use a much tighter scoped query, which looks for specific items ideally in a specific list, rather than a broad brush query across site collection. Even with scoped queries, you will have cache misses at higher percentiles. So in the 95th and higher, you will have cache misses, which means users will have intermittent performance issues. A sure shot way of avoiding that is by relying on content by search web part. It's got an inbuilt query builder, which allows you to craft queries, test it, and then you can use HTML and JavaScript templates to render it on client-side and customize it. And the third option, which actually is a real option, is, like, for example, the offices list I had, that doesn't change that often. Instead of me querying it dynamically every time, I can just have a set of links directly inserted into the master page or the page layout. So just multiple options, pick the one that works for you. The only thing I want to call out is the content by search web part relies on the search index being fresh. So if you've just added a document or just created a list, you need to wait till the search crawl has gone through and the index has been populated. There may be scenarios where you cannot afford that delay. In those cases, you may still need to go down the path of content by query web part. Just keep it extremely scoped. Okay, the third option is, now we're going to start looking at some of the front end or client side aspects of performance. You know, one of the things that we notice is, I spoke about large images and large files coming down as part of page load. What we notice a lot of times is people just drag and drop images into SharePoint document libraries and image galleries and just start using them on sites without knowing the true impact of it. I've seen high-definition images like what I spoke about earlier in the talk being used as background images and as icons. You want to avoid those traps. What we recommend is you work with designers or work with someone who is pretty comfortable with web design and ask them for web-optimized images. Sometimes you may not have that option. We have a feature in SharePoint that allows you to scale images dynamically. How many of you know about image renditions in SharePoint? Okay, I've got three or four hands coming up. I would have hoped for more, so let's make sure that everyone knows about image renditions. So image renditions is a feature that we shipped as part of our 2013 release. And what it does is it allows you to scale images dynamically without you having to open up a photo editing tool. So I'm just going to browse to my site assets library. And that's got a few images in there. I've used some of those images on my homepage. Yeah. And if I just copy that image URL, see, that's a pretty high def large image that I've put onto my homepage, and I've scaled it in HTML to have the thumbnail. What image rendition does, it allows you to use the same images, but gives you scaled versions of those. So let me just pick the same. Let me just pick that one. And go design, hit edit renditions. And what you will see once it comes up, that it out of the box takes a large image and gives you images scaled at different aspect ratios. If I go, let's pick that image, the 300 by 100 image, open up a browser, just put it in there. And what I want to show you is the size difference this can make. If you look at the download size for that file, 7.9 kilobytes. If I get rid of that query string parameter and request the raw file, it's still downloading. It's a large file. It's close to a meg. By using image renditions, you can use the same image, scale it down orders of magnitude, without having to do any work in photo editing software. This is built into SharePoint. Use it when you're using a lot of iconography on your home pages. Another thing that we notice, if you look at this page, I'm just going to close this page down and go back. When the page loads on a typical device, reduce the size of the page, what you would notice is there's a lot of content below the fold. And a lot of study has been done on web usage, which goes to show that a lot of users don't scroll the homepage. They don't scroll the homepage. So one of the techniques that you see a lot of popular websites use is to delay load content below the fold. And what I mean by delay loading is content that's below the fold only gets loaded on demand as the user starts scrolling. I'm going to show you an example of that. I'm just going to flip back to my master page. I have another master page called as Network Optimized Master Page. Let's apply that. It's all applied. I'm just going to clear out that. And what I'm going to do is just re-request that page. Okay. Page comes down. We made around 117 requests, which is still a lot. But like I said, I have purposely messed with this page. But what's happened now is content below the fold has not loaded. So the images that we saw here, these images, this content, and these images has not loaded yet. What I'm going to do, I'm just going to clear this out to show you that as I start scrolling, I start downloading those images. If I scroll really quickly, you'll see it's still downloading. It gives you this on-demand download. Rather than you having to download all the content up front, you download it on demand. And this significantly improves your page load times when the user first time browses to the page, when the cache is not primed, local cache is not primed. Instead of having to download all these images, you only download it if they scroll. So how do we do this? I'm just going to flip back to Visual Studio. We've done a couple of things. Let's go. It's actually a bit of JavaScript to make this possible. What we've done is we've used HTML5 data attributes to tag certain images with this tag saying, when we set the image, instead of setting the source up front, we add a custom attribute. I'll show you what that looks like, to point to the actual source of the image. When we scroll, we check for elements that have got that attribute, take the value for the image from that attribute, and set the source for the image. And that causes the browser to then on-demand do a fetch. So I flip back to this page, and I'm just going to show you what this looks like. So if I zoom in here, you can see that image is set with an attribute called as data delayed image background image, and it points to an image rendition. The source, in this case, this value is not set when the page is initially downloaded. It comes down with an empty source tag. As I scroll, the JavaScript, we've got event handlers that hook into the scroll event, figure out using jQuery which elements have got this value, and then set the source on those elements. And then the browser goes out and downloads those images. This is a really neat trick that helps you to save unnecessary round trips on first page load. Just to summarize quickly, compress images and use web-optimized images as much as possible. In case you do not have an option to use those images, use the built-in image rendition feature to compress and scale down images rather than scaling them down in HTML. I've seen this happen a lot where you have like a 1 meg image, like a 1080p picture scaled down to 100 pixel by 100 pixel image in HTML. That's a lot of work that the browser has to do. So if you do need a small image, scale it outside of SharePoint or use image renditions to scale it. The other option, and very valuable in high latency scenario, is delay loading. So if you're fetching for resources across the ocean, you have users who are far away from your data center, delay loading greatly improves page load times. The next thing I want to focus on from a client-side perf aspect is reducing the number of round trips or HTTP requests that the browser has to make when we load pages. And I'll show you what options we've got there. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to need to flip back to my old master page, unfortunately. I want to capture a trace with the unoptimized master page for network. Hit F12 on there and be ready. Okay. Probably disable the cache as well, so we actually go back to the server. Okay. What do you notice here? Now we made 160 odd requests. I've got Bootstrap used CSS, Bootstrap HTML to make the web page responsive to different form factors. There's a lot of content coming down from SharePoint to render this page. So one of the recommendations we have is to make sure that these pages are minified to reduce download sizes. So if you look at this core CSS file, and if I look at the response, that's a nicely formatted CSS file that's come down. But it's not minified. And what I mean by not minified is that it's got white spaces, it's got comments in it which developers have put in. What you can do to significantly reduce download sizes is for these static assets, run them through a minifier which takes away white spaces, takes away these comments, and really compresses the file so you get a smaller download size. You can do that for CSS files, you can do that for JavaScript files. Most of the publicly available JavaScript libraries like jQuery and Knockout, they all give you minified versions of their files. So please use them when you go out to production. I'll give you another tool. If you are building custom JavaScript in-house, I use this tool called as Web Essentials. It's available for download. It plugs into Visual Studio as a plugin. It's available for download freely from the Visual Studio Gallery. It's actually developed by a PM on the ASP.NET team. And this tool actually gives you features to go ahead and do minification. I can pick any file. In this case, it's already minified, so it's not showing me the minification option, but you can see over here, it's giving me the option to minify CSS, minify HTML, and JavaScript. So what you can do is develop using full bleed comments with all the right indentation. However, before going to prod, run it through something like Web Essentials, compress it, and use that in a production environment. Another thing I want to show you is this technique of bundling assets together. How many of you know what bundling is? Okay, I can see a couple of hands going up. So bundling, this is this technique to take multiple files, combine them into one, and send on one file to the client. You can use, like for example, Bootstrap. I've got like 4 or 5 CSS files, which I've used for during my development time. But the browser doesn't care if it's one file or three files. So what I can do is send it through a bundling tool, take those 3 files, combine them into a single file, and send that single file down to the user. So the user ends up downloading less content and saves on HTTP round trips back and forth from the server. So I've just flipped back to my master page. I'm going to hit F12. So I've got this, the old one open. Okay, there you go. And what I want to show you here is when the master page is coming down, I had 4 or 5 files coming down previously for Bootstrap. In this case, I've got something called as bootbundle-min.sys, which is a minified version of those Bootstrap CSS files. And I've taken 3 or 4 of those files and combined them into one CSS file and sent them down. This is extremely valuable in saving HTTP round trips. Again, how do you do this? Web Essentials to our rescue. If I go back in to CSS, I can pick these files, and I've created a bundle in this case. And by just right-clicking and using, I've already bundled in this case, I can easily create both JavaScript and CSS bundles. I can just have all my CSS, have the right design and dev experience. When I'm ready to go, right-click, create me a bundle, and reference that bundle in my production site. Here is an example of the bundle. It's got oodles of CSS files all combined into a single contoso.min.css. So all those 15 odd CSS files, which were previously coming down as separate requests, now come down as one file as part of the minified contoso.min.css. And you can see that this has been minified as well. So it's like a really long line, all the white space is taken out. And it comprises of all these files which have been bundled. So please do use this technique to reduce your overhead of download. Again, when you are on high latency, low bandwidth connections, this goes a long way to save on those extra round trips. Okay, back to the deck. Quick recap, reduce the number of HTTP round trips, big time saver, and performance booster on high latency, low bandwidth networks. Reduce the download size by minifying and combining them into one file. And another technique that you can use, which I didn't demo today, is using image sprites. How many of you know what image sprites are? Okay, a few hands. Yeah. Again, it's another technique where you can take multiple images, combine them into one image, and then you use CSS to position those images so that you, again, save on number of downloads. So just to summarize, what I wanted to prove and show you over here is the demo that we had, I had my tenancy sitting in our Singapore data center. So what I wanted to show you here is by following the right practices, no matter the latency or the distance, you still can have performant pages if you follow the right tips. So just to give you a quick rundown, what would we do? We started first playing around with the structural nav, and then swapped it either to a managed nav or to use the search-driven navigation. That's significantly brought down our render times. We then replaced the content by query web part and switched it out for a content by search web part. We looked at using image optimization to reduce download size and render times. And finally, we also used techniques to optimize HTTP traffic. One thing that I didn't show you was in the last demo, we also offloaded my common files out to a CDN. So these are my custom files that are getting served out of a CDN. So instead of going back all the way to Singapore to pick my CSS file, I was getting served out of a CDN node somewhere close to me in Europe. Okay, switching gears. A common question, you know, that we get more often than you would expect is, how do we know the SharePoint Online has enough capacity to handle my portal? I'm going to come hit the server with thousands of users. How do I know that SharePoint Online is not going to fall over? And to answer this, I want to, and to give you an insights into why this is not a problem and how we handle capacity, I want to talk about two key things. I want to talk to you about how we, the engineering team, manage capacity, especially compute capacity within SharePoint Online, and what strategies we've seen work with large portal rollouts. I've been involved with rollouts where there have been users of more than 100,000 users being active on a portal, have had successful rollouts. So there are some learnings that I want to share with you that you can take away and apply to your scenarios. So we do this thing called as predictive capacity. And what this is because of the scale of SharePoint Online, we get this fairly steady signal when we aggregate over multiple farms. When we look at capacity and requests over multiple farm, we get this fairly steady signal. It's a bit jiggly, but fairly steady. But what we can do, we can draw a growth curve through that curve and then project off of it. And we use, and what we notice is SharePoint Online has been growing at an exponential rate. Month over month, we see it growing exponentially. So what we do is we use that curve to forecast and procure hardware to support the service. And what I want to show you is that each, we have all our farms are, containerized in this logical thing called as a zone, which is multiple farms running. And if you look at, when we look at each farm, the load patterns are more spiky. You know, sometimes we see loads increasing, sometimes they stay flat, sometimes they even go down, and we see this happening. But what we get because of SharePoint Online scale is this efficiency to predict and forecast for farms in aggregate. But what we notice is that although you may have individual farms growing at different rates, when you aggregate all of them, we can predictably forecast growth. And we use that to go procure hardware. And another thing is that because of the sample size is so large, even variance in tens and thousands of users will not budge our forecast and capacity. So I just wanted to let you know that the sample size is so large, and because of the scale, we have these efficiencies built into our planning and forecasting. So this is what we do to go plan for our capacity, go procure it, and get it into our data center. How do we make sure this capacity gets allocated to the farms as they organically grow and as they need this extended capacity? So what I have here is a chart which shows you average CPU times for one of our farms over a week. And what we do is we watch this signal very, very carefully. And we put boundaries around this CPU consumption. What we want to do, we want to run our CPU, our front ends, at around 40% CPU utilization, so in the green zone. So we often notice, because of load or because of growth, these machines start tending into the yellow zone or start getting a bit busier. And some farms, machines in the farm start getting hotter. When we notice that, we dynamically add capacity to flatten that spike and push it back into the green zone. And I want to, again, point out one thing. I don't have numbers on the slide, but these farms are really large farms, and they handle thousands of requests per second. A large portal that we notice from a customer generally ends up sending us around 10 or 20 RPS for a really large, highly engaged portal. The farms generally handle somewhere between 1,000 to 2,000 RPSs, which is a lot of capacity that we add. So even if you come at SharePoint with a fairly busy portal, we have the capacity with the headroom to handle that load. Now, when I speak to customers, you know, I get called and I have conference calls with customers, and I get told this thing. Sham, on Monday, we're going to launch a portal. We've got 10,000 users. Can SharePoint Online handle it? Yeah. And this is a very frequent discussion that I have with my customers. And one thing that I want to point out based on rollouts that we've seen previously is there is this two sets of curves that you get with most portal rollouts. The first one is the invited users curve. So this is number of users you have sent out emails to, you know are going to end up eventually on the portal. And then you have this active users who actually show up within the first day, within the first week. And we see this ratio where the invited users is always much, much, much more than the actual users who rock up. And I've had customers saying, no, Sham, our users are extremely diligent. I know they are going to hit that link on day one within the first hour. I can tell you we have never, never seen that active users get even close to invited users. Never seen it doesn't mean it can't happen. There might be some scenarios where that might happen. You know, you would ask how. If you do a big DNS switch, if you've got a really busy portal on-prem and you come Monday morning and switch DNS to say, now everyone goes to SharePoint Online, you might end up sending us the traffic. Or you do something like run a load test against us. This is something that we see customers do to verify capacity, and where we see a sudden surge in traffic from customers. And I want to talk a couple of things about load tests. First of all, most load tests are aimed at validating the invited user scenario. So you have load tests which probably are scaled out, running 100,000 agents, hammering away at SharePoint Online. What it does, it really does not validate your actual usage scenario. That's one thing. The second thing, load test by nature is used to stress out the system to the point that it falls over. And we don't want SharePoint Online falling over because we've got thousands of other customers sharing the same infrastructure on the same farm. So just, although we love our customers, the team absolutely loves our customers, we do turn off load tests when we notice them. And this is not because we can't handle it. It's more to make sure the tests that go south can be controlled without affecting tens and thousands of other users on the same farm. So what is the strategy to roll out a large portal and having confidence that it's going to work? So what we've seen, both within Microsoft when we launch large portals and working with large customers, is a staged approach to rollout is guaranteed path to success. And what I mean by staged rollout is you want to start off with a pilot group, with a core set of users who you know you can trust, who you know will be highly engaged, who will give you the feedback that you want, and run an extended set of pilot session with them gain the feedback, both from a functionality perspective and from a performance perspective. Once you think you've had enough feedback, extend the invitation to the second set of users and have this rollout staged in waves, where you incrementally add more users to the portal while validating both functionality and performance at scale. And this is how you get confidence that the portal will work correctly on SharePoint Online when my 100,000 users with 200 RPS, which we never see, land up on the site. But sometimes a slow rollout is not an option. There are scenarios where slow rollout is not an option. So what do we do? And I just want to quickly give you a real-life example of what we've seen internally at Microsoft just to show you and reassure you that we can handle this load. We have a portal within, which is hosted on the, which we use internally to stream videos. It's called the Academy Live Portal. We use it in two formats, one to stream live events, and the second thing to have recorded or training videos, presentations like TechEd, all stored there which users can go search and watch on demand. And this is built on SharePoint Online, and we work very closely with Microsoft IT on building this, on building such portal. And the reason is because Microsoft, we believe that Microsoft is a big enough user base. We have 100,000 plus users, and it gives us a good chance to validate our solutions at scale. And we believe that if we can get it right for Microsoft IT, more often than not, we get it right for our customers. So this is what the Academy portal looks like. It uses, it's basically a video streaming service, like I said, hosted on SharePoint. The core video is streamed from Azure. We use features around the video, which are based on SharePoint. But what we did is, what we often get is Microsoft IT or MSIT sending out these messages regularly to the entire company saying, come watch this video or a live event. And it's 100,000 users coming to the site in a very short period. That's, you know, we used to get nervous about that. So we worked with the Microsoft IT team to really optimize this portal to say, what can we do to make sure that we can sustain load under peak hours without going down? And we did a few things, like we did some of the optimizations that we spoke about. We moved static assets off to CDNs. We moved content that we could not put onto CDNs into the assets library. How many of you knew the secret sauce behind the assets library? There's something special about that. Okay, I'll let you in on a secret. The assets library is just another document library in SharePoint. And you would know, whenever you request a resource from SharePoint, we do two things. We go check whether the user is authenticated, and then we check whether the user has permissions to actually request that resource. When you put resources into, like images or files into the asset library, we skip the permissions check. We just check whether the user is authenticated, and if the user is authenticated, we serve the request back. So this is really good for images that you don't want to put out on the public domain, but you don't want the overhead of permissions. So we use that to offload some of the assets. And we had, when we announced the new CEO earlier on the year, we got a big email saying, everyone from the company, please come meet the new CEO. It was picked at a time which was conducive to US as well as the European audience. And this is what we saw. Everything in green is all the requests that we got during that peak. The one in orange is the requests generated by the webcast. There's 100,000 odd users coming in to watch the webcast. What you notice, even at that scale, that's a tiny fraction of the 3.5 million requests we got during that hour. So even with that scale, it does not contribute to a significant percent of the load distribution that SharePoint Online gets. Rest of this load comes from other tools such as your OneDrive for Business sync client, your Office application, custom apps. That makes up a lot of the SharePoint Online load. Web page requests, even at scale, does not account for the majority of the web requests. And we've been having absolutely no problems handling scale, handling video distribution at that scale. So just quickly to summarize, you know, He spoke about four key things: tooling in browsers. So I just have this mantra: if in doubt, hit F12. Yeah. Lightweight pages, some of the tips and tricks, reducing page sizes, reducing render times on the server. I gave you a quick insight into how we manage capacity and to reassure you that we've got the buffers in place to handle your load. And then finally, how do we stage rollouts to make sure we have success at the end of our launches? I have a cheat sheet in here for you to go look at this, but I'll skip through that. I just want to point out a few things. We had a few sessions that we ran specifically in the performance track for Office 365 this week. Some target the networking side of Office 365. I really hope that you've either been to that session or please watch them online. And we've also launched a lot of guidance. Everything you saw today is now available on the web with those code samples. aka.ms/tune is a shortcut or friendly URL you can use to get land on those pages, and that will give you all the guidance that we spoke about in this talk and also throughout the week. If you need to have a chat with me, come have a talk to me. I'll be at the Office 365 booth after this session. And thank you. If you have any questions, let's start taking questions. I know we are nearly out of time. Any questions? Yep, we got one here. It's a lot of these things are web best practices. They apply, they're technology agnostic and apply to public websites too. Any other questions? Yep.
Yeah. We are having some issues when we are using ABFS as an application.
Mm-hmm.
The problem we have large delays the first time the user enters.
Mm-hmm. So just to repeat the question, you know, they're using ADFS to do single sign-on, and they have a sluggish log-on experience. Yeah. So ADFS troubleshooting, you know, is a bit outside the scope of this topic, but feel free to come have a chat with me. I think we've got a few ADFS folks out in the booth who can give you some guidance on what might be the problem. So let's have a chat about that after the session. Any other questions? Okay. Thanks a lot for coming, and I hope you enjoyed the session.